At an outdoor strip mall in Lenexa, you'll find a Middle Eastern grocery store, a hookah lounge, a Lebanese restaurant and cafe, and a Middle Eastern bakery all right next door to each other. It's becoming known as kind of an informal Middle Eastern strip.
Well, I think the reason why it's called the Middle Eastern strip, maybe because of the places around us, like they're owned by Middle Eastern owners.
Farouz Awad runs that bakery, Nazareth Sweets, with her husband Samir.
My husband and his late uncle, they thought that there was a need for a Middle Eastern bakery in the Kansas City metro area, so they decided they're just going to open a bakery, and then that's how we started.
Farouz and her husband are from Jerusalem, and their recipes come from the desserts they grew up eating. There's always a display case full of pastries, baklava, of course, but many others, like kanafa, which is a sweet cheese pastry drenched in melted sugar and served hot.
I like the ma'mul. Ma'mul, basically, it's like a Middle Eastern cookie, and we use special molders to make ma'mul. And it's basically made out of either flour or farina. Farina is the coarse cream of wheat. That's the dough, and we fill it either with dates, walnuts, or pistachio, and we use special molders for those, and we bake them, and then we top them with powdered sugar.
Yum. It does not bode well when I start a food show drooling. I'm going to be craving Middle Eastern food so bad by the end of this hour. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on KCUR's Central Standard, we'll be working our way back to dessert as we explore Middle Eastern food in Kansas City restaurants, cafes, pastry shops, and grocery stores. We may have the beginnings of a Middle Eastern strip, as we just heard, but we still don't have what I would call tons of specifically Middle Eastern restaurants in town. Still, things like hummus and falafel have grown in popularity, and many of the dishes that are central to the cuisine can be found on area menus if you know where to look. The food critics will join us shortly, but let's start with a home cook, someone who grew up eating Syrian food. Christine Rossi teaches Middle Eastern cooking at the Culinary Center of Kansas City. Hi, Christine.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Talk to me about how you learned to make the dishes you prepare with your students.
Well, I grew up in a Middle Eastern family. My father's family came from Antioch, Syria, and he was the firstborn in the United States. So needless to say, we ate Syrian food almost every night.
What are some of the defining characteristics of Syrian food?
Well, we eat a lot of lamb and a lot of rice, which is different than the Italian food. I'm married to an Italian man, so we had to switch from week to week. Is it going to be lamb and rice, or is it going to be pasta and sauce?
That's funny. Talk to me a little bit about, I hear that it was your grandmother who taught you to cook.
It was my grandmother's influence because I was very young. I was growing up as she was doing all the cooking and sending it over. But actually, my aunts taught me more on Lebanese and Syrian cooking than my sito did.
And sito, that's grandmother?
Grandmother, yes.
Tell me, first of all, about your grandmother and then tell me about your aunts. And I mean, I guess I just want to get a feel for the people whose kitchens we're about to invade in some ways. Yeah.
Well, when you're in a Syrian family, you're in a large family. So there's never an empty table and there's never an empty chair. So my grandmother's house, you could just hear the cousins all giggling and laughing. And when I walked through the house after everyone passed, I could just smell the food. As you walk through the kitchen, there'd be pots of dolma, which is anything that's stuffed. That's the Arabic name for things that are stuffed. So you'd have.
So it doesn't have to be grape leaves?
No. We stuff everything.
Give it like to us. What?
We will stuff everything. Zucchini. We stuff cabbage, we stuff meat pies, everything has a stuffing in it. We love to stuff things, yes.
So what else do you think we need, anything else we need to know about your grandmother and your aunts before we hear about their recipes?
Well, my grandmother, I keep wanting to say sito, was such a loving influence in my life, very compassionate, both she and my grandfather, Jiddo. And as I would come in, because I was the youngest of the grandchildren, she would take my hand, and she'd walk me over to the cupboard in this very big old house, very tall cupboards. She would open it, and there'd be a jar of Jordan almonds, colored Jordan almonds. And that was always a treat. So she would take it down, and she'd let me take one out. She'd put her finger up to one, and then she'd put her finger over her mouth like, shh, don't tell the others. And it was our little secret. So every time I came in the back door, we'd go through this little process, and it was so special. And then I'd look in all the pots, and she had a canary in the kitchen. Why? I don't know. But all these little Syrian ladies love to have canaries.
Wow. So what are some of the defining characteristics in your mind of either Middle Eastern food really generally or Syrian food specifically?
Well, since I'm more familiar with the Syrian food,
I'll stick
with what I know. The main dish, one of our main dishes, is called kibbeh. And kibbeh is probably from the region, and that's why it's so popular. It was a very competitive dish, so the ants all made it a little different. So you had to be careful never to insult anyone's kibbeh. And it's made with lamb and bulgur wheat and a lot of special spices.
So wait, why did all the different family members have their own spin on this? Is that sort of a point of pride that anyone who is a cook kind of puts their own spin on what you're calling kibbeh? I've heard it pronounced a bunch of different ways.
Kibbeh. It's kind of like one aunt might add a little too much bulgur wheat, one aunt might a little much salt, a little too much onion. It's a lot like my Italian side, where the red sauce might be a little runny or the red sauce is a little too thick. So you never want to insult someone's kibbeh. But kibbeh was always in the refrigerator. It was either stuffed kibbeh balls in the freezer or a kibbeh saniya, which is a big pan of baked kibbeh. And it was kind of known as Syrian penicillin.
What do you mean?
Well, anybody who was sick, you didn't send a card. You didn't even call them. You made them a pan of kibbeh. You would take it to their home. And a long time ago, when my youngest daughter, Nicole, was just in the crib, and she came down with this horrible croup. And if you're a mom, you know that cough is terrifying. So we rushed her to the hospital, and they put her in a little oxygen tent. It was very sad.
Yeah.
She was very mad. she would not eat anything. Then my father came to the hospital with some kibbeh. And he gave it to me, and I said, "She's so young." He said, try. So I gave her a little piece of kibbeh in the oxygen tent, and she just ate all the kibbeh I gave her. She couldn't eat it fast enough, and the next day she was home.
Wow.
So it's really good.
Now, you've described the ingredients and some of the, the feeling around it. What is, if from the eating it perspective,
yes,
what would you say it's like? I mean,
kibbeh is unique because it's almost like a meatloaf, but it's meat on meat. What can be better? You know, meat on
meat. Especially in Kansas City.
Especially in Kansas City, right. So you have like your ground lamb and your bulgur wheat and your cinnamon and your spices that you spice it with. And you pat the raw meat down in the bottom of the pan. And then you make this interesting filling. It's called hushwi. And when my mother would be cooking hushwi in the kitchen, my brother Sam and I'd run out and we'd take a spoon, and when she wasn't looking, eat it right out of the pan. Because that's made with butter and pine nuts and a little bit of onion.
Yum.
And yes. And it smells so good. And then you brown up a pound of your lamb. And then you put the lamb in between the raw meat, and then you take raw meat and put it on top. So it's like a pie. It's kibbeh saniya is like a pie. And you cut it in triangles and you bake it. So it's a big pan of kibbeh.
It's sort of like a casserole-esque quality.
Exactly, meat-on-meat casserole. And you serve it with labneh or a real thick yogurt on the side. And you can also do that same recipe but make kibbeh balls. And then you stuff the balls with the pine nut and the hushwi, and you can put a little bit of yogurt in there. And you can fry those up or sauté them, yes. So it's fabulous.
And remind me of the seasoning again.
The seasoning that we use in most of our dishes is a little bit of allspice, a little bit of cinnamon. Those are their two main ones, salt and pepper, for the kibbeh.
It's kind of got a savory and sweet quality, too.
Savory and sweet, and it's just a hint. It's nothing is outstanding in any of the dishes. It's all very mellow and just delicious. It's like a symphony coming together in your mouth. It's great.
So when you say nothing's outstanding, you mean like you don't pick up on one flavor by itself?
Right. You don't like pick up if there's garlic in there or if there's cinnamon in there. You just know there's something in here that's really unique, just the way you make it.
When you talk about the lamb, is there something about the flavor of lamb that you think gives this dish something special, or would any meat work? Is that just a totally insane thing to ask?
Not at all. Actually, I've lessened the amount of lamb. I use the lamb right now for the hushwi, for the middle part, and then I'll use a good ground beef, double ground, so it's really thin. And sometimes I'll grind it myself for the top and the bottom. Then it's not quite as heavy as all lamb. But, of course, the lamb goes back to the Middle Eastern traditions.
So. You were saying that everyone makes kibbeh a little differently.
Yeah.
Tell me what makes yours unique. I mean, I know you were saying that some of those unique points were maybe flaws in some cases, though you don't want to point those out. But I'm guessing that as someone who prepares this dish for students and kind of refine your recipe, is there a special spin you like to put on it?
Love. actually, it's so much usage of the hands and coming in time of experience, how much wheat you want to put into it, how long you want to soak your wheat. So you're not crunching on wheat, but yet the filler's there. And you can use quinoa. You can make kibbeh with potato. I have, you know, vegetarian and vegan recipes for kibbeh and everything.
Tell me more about it. So much working with the hands. What are you doing with your hands when you're making kibbeh?
You better wash your hands and take your rings off, because you're going to take your raw beef or your raw lamb, and you're going to add the soaked bulgur wheat in there, and you're going to mush it together and make sure it's well ingrained, so there's not just wheat on top of your meat. And then you add your spices and do the same. You have a bowl of ice water. You dip your fingertips in your ice water, and you start patting, and the process begins.
Sounds like such a full sensory experience. And it also sounds to me like your hands would be the maybe even more than your conscious mind would know if it's going right.
Exactly. The feel and the visual is everything. And then you can just take, I know you're not supposed to eat a little raw meat, but to take a little pinch and see if it needs a little more salt at that point or something else. So, yes.
I have never seen this dish on a menu. And I wonder, you know, kind of along those lines, do you think there's something people miss if they're familiarity with Middle Eastern cuisine comes primarily from what restaurants have to offer? I mean, what is it that you learn about the cuisine from a home-cooked meal that you don't get in a box of carryout?
Oh, wow. Where should I begin? A normal big restaurant, international Middle Eastern restaurant, such that the kind that I would eat at in Georgetown in Washington, D.C., or out in Portland, Oregon, when you sit down, you'll have like a table full of what you call tapas, what we call maza. And that would be all different little dishes of wonderful olives that are marinated in garlic and olive oil and lemon. And you'll have the hummus.
Mouth-watering again.
Exactly. The hummus, the baba ganoush, all the different dips, and the flatbreads and the pita breads. So that would be your start. And then you will have the main dish would be like a kibbeh and then Syrian rice. And the rice is very unique as well that serves with it. And maybe some stuffed squash on the side.
What's unique about the rice?
The rice is great. I'm glad you asked. You, again, take some butter and you sauté some very thin spaghetti that you have just cut very tiny pieces in the butter along with pine nuts. Then you add your rice and sauté it a little bit in the butter. And then you add your chicken broth on top of that and let it cook and absorb all the chicken broth. And then you toss it around and it's very unique and very tasty.
What is your favorite Middle Eastern dish, or even just a dish with maybe a hint of Middle Eastern flavor or influence at a local restaurant?
I haven't found one.
Really?
No.
Tell me more about that. Have you tried?
I've tried. I've tried tabbouleh, and they overwhelm it in the wheat. And it's supposed to be a combination of the wheat and the parsley and the onions and the tomatoes and such. So I would love to throw that challenge out. You're more than welcome to invite me to your restaurant.
The tabbouleh challenge.
Tabbouleh challenge.
When KCUR Central Standard returns, the food critics will take us on their tour of Middle Eastern dishes in and around town. Christine Rossi, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and you're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. It's a Food Critics Friday, and we're talking about Middle Eastern food. I'm here with Charles Ferruza. Hi, Charles.
Hey, Gina.
He writes for the Shawnee Mission Post and The Independent. I'd also like to welcome Mary Block, who blogs about food at Around the Block. Hi, Mary. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And Jenny Vergara. She's with us from Feast Magazine. Hey, Jenny.
Good morning.
So, Charles, I'm going to start with you. You've been writing about food in Kansas City for a long time. So what do you think of as the big picture when it comes to Middle Eastern food in Kansas City over the last couple of decades?
Well, I think when we think of Middle Eastern, at least in the Midwest, it's sort of an umbrella term, meaning it's kind of a mix of different culinary things that always seem to have either baba ganoush or hummus or pita bread. But I don't know that we have any. I think the cuisines have become more distinctive in the last couple decades, and it's not just, you know, a hummus shop.
So let's start with the popular crowd pleasers, the menu items you don't have to be an expert to know and love. Where do you guys like to go for hummus now that they have it on probably half of all restaurant menus, at least in the appetizer section?
Good question. I think hummus tastes alike no matter where you go.
I like it the one at Marble Top Cafe. That's yummy. He has it in the stores.
Well, that's his specialty.
That's his specialty. So you can get all flavors and spicy or not spicy, and he does a nice job in there.
Okay, and Jenny, what about you?
I like Holy Land Cafe. I know they were kind of part of the first part of the segment, but they have a nice creamy texture. The tahini, the introduction of tahini, which is kind of makes everything smooth and creamy. So, but I think I'm so glad to see us kind of moving away from the chunky kind of hummus to more of a creamy, simple. I mean, it seemed like for a while we just had some, I don't know if it was just lack of wanting to use kind of the more expensive ingredients in hummus. You know, I want more than bean dip, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I realize, obviously, that that's exactly what hummus is, but it should be elevated a little bit with some olive oil and some tahini and some sumac, if I'm really lucky, maybe a little spice in the middle.
Anyone want to throw in any additional hummuses before I inquire about pita with Charles? No? Okay, Charles, there is some pita that you've been singing the praises of, and I like that you have really honed in on that. Where do you like to get pita?
Well, Jenny was talking earlier about a place in Westport that really did have beautiful, but it wasn't really pita bread. It was naan.
You're
right.
Naan. Yeah. It was more naan.
Yeah. And
but it was still delicious.
The Olive Cafe, which is on the east side of town, they do bake their own pita, and I think they bake it actually for a lot of local restaurants. It's quite good and very fresh tasting. I mean, there's nothing worse than a piece of dry pita, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just takes the joy out of life.
But tell me more. I mean, I think a lot of people can kind of take the pita that's dipping into their hummus for granted. What makes great pita?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, a softness, yeah, obviously, and a freshness.
Those were the two words I was going to use as well.
I was reading them. Yeah, I read your mind.
Exactly.
You know, pita is supposed to be essentially flavorless, and it is. It's just a vehicle, really.
Yeah.
But you know, if it's even remotely on the verge of being stale, you just want to throw it on the floor.
Yeah. Well, I said this earlier, but let's be honest. We love pita more than anything else in terms of Middle Eastern food, I think, as Americans. We want a giant basket of pita, and we want to
dip it. Just because Americans love bread.
Right.
Replenished
right.
constantly.
Thank yeah. you. Replenished constantly. Dip, 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 and whatever's on your table. We love pita. Let's
now,
just admit it.
I will
it.
Say this, having worked for a Greek restaurant, that they did not make their own pita, but they bought the best in town. I think pita has to be grilled. It just has to be grilled.
Warm. In most places, I think it's just warmed up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it needs to be, you know, brushed with a little oil and grilled first.
That's a treat.
Get some input on this. There are things, as we've been hearing, that you can get at pretty much any Middle Eastern restaurant, and in some cases, you can find those things at restaurants that don't make any claim to be Middle Eastern, but there might be some harder to find dishes that you would expect to find if you were of Middle Eastern descent. And I've invited a friend of mine to come and give us some insight into that. Christine Boutros grew up in an Egyptian household in Australia, and she's lived in Kansas City for a few years. Hi, Christine.
Hi.
How many years has it been now? I've lost track.
3.5 years.
Well, first of all, can you weigh in for us on this pita bread question? Does it have to be grilled?
It has to be grilled.
Amen.
Thank you so much.
We like her. She can stay.
I hope all the restaurants out there are hearing that.
Yeah. Grilled on the stovetop.
Yeah.
Anything else that you require in pita at the dinner table?
Needs to be warm. Yeah. So it has to be fresh off the stove.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, so is there anything that you have been pleasantly surprised to find on a Kansas City menu?
There was one place, I think it was at Aladdin's, and I noticed that they had kashri on their menu.
What is kashri?
It is a lentil pasta tomato dish. And it is, I guess, something that you traditionally find in Egypt. And I have not really seen that on really many Middle Eastern menus.
How is the Aladdin version?
It was good. It was good. And I would go back for it, yes.
Mm-hmm. And where would you go in town for some of your other favorites? Can you find your other favorites?
There are some things. They also did have a really great lentil soup. And I do like the falafel at Sahara's, if you've ever been there as well.
What makes their falafel stand out to you? Falafel is another one of those things that you can find a lot of places now.
That's right. And it's falafel is hard for me. I have to say I'm not the biggest fan of falafel because I'm not into the dry consistency of it. But theirs is just a little bit more moist, I think, anyway. But the game changer for me with falafel is if you can find somewhere that will serve it with pickled turnips.
Pickled turnips.
Pickled turnips.
Wait, tell me more about that.
So pickled turnips, it gives you like this additional crunch and it just sort of, I guess, complements because it's very opposite in texture to the falafel.
Well, I find falafel to be incredibly boring. So where can I find it with pickled turnips?
I don't know of anywhere. I couldn't tell you, but you can pick up some pickled turnips at Al Habashi's down at the River Market.
So just carry them with you to the restaurant.
Is it a condiment? Like you eat it on the side with falafel. It's not on falafel or in falafel.
Yeah, it's a condiment on the side. Or if you like to wrap it in pita bread as a sandwich, just to have it in there. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Americans love anything fried. And I've noticed in Kansas City that falafel tends to be over-fried.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I don't want a falafel French fry.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I like green. I like to bite into my falafel and see the green of the herbs because that tells me that somebody put some nice fresh green herbs to give it that beautiful color. So many times it's just kind of a mealy brown. Disappointing.
Jenny, where do you find a falafel like that?
Oh, you know what? I've had great falafel kind of almost everywhere I've gone. I don't really have too many complaints. I think Papu's Cafe does a good falafel.
Tell me about Papu's Cafe.
Well, Papu's is kind of legendary. So on 75th Street, inside of a Shell gas station, you know how much we enjoy eating delicious food out of gas stations in Kansas City. But We love it. But
also coffee.
Yes, coffee too. We'll take anything out of a really cute little gas station. But Papu's really kind of sprung up out of this Shell station on 75th Street and really has developed its own following. It's even built kind of a little outdoor patio area for when the weather's nice. So they've continued to grow over the years. But basically, it's just, you know, Middle Eastern cuisine. It's a lot of kind of grab-and-go sandwiches that you can just pop in and get. They've got platters as well. But really fresh, authentic, lovely Mediterranean Middle Eastern cuisine.
So I want to get back to falafel and Papu's and all this stuff. But first, I mean, Christine, I've heard that you're having trouble finding some of the lamb dishes that you like.
Right, and, you know, there are the traditional kebabs and shish kebabs and koftas. Koftas, I think, that one can be a bit more of a challenge, which is a ground lamb dish. But it's more the stews. You don't often find the variety of stews that you can, you know, have with lamb. One of them I personally like is the bamya, which is with okra and a tomato base stew. And it's just, you know, it just, because, you know, the lamb is braised, so it's softened and it just melts in your mouth.
Does anyone here know of a great, if not a Middle Eastern lamb dish in particular, a lamb dish that incorporates perhaps some Middle Eastern braising techniques or seasoning techniques?
Well, we had a conversation earlier, and I recommended KC Grill and Kebab to her on 87th Street in Lenexa, not only for lamb kebabs, obviously, which is one of just the kind of street food staples, but they also do a lamb shank dish. Mm-hmm. And I believe that they do have a few stews that you can ask for on the side. They use they use kind of Iranian Persian kind of language on the menu to denote that. So I found myself kind of constantly Googling words so I knew what this was to get it. But the owner, I think, would be very accommodating to whatever your request was. But I do believe there are a few stews that you can ask for and that they'll put their kebab meat into and make for you.
Where was this again, Jenny?
KC Grill and Kebab on 87th Street in Lenexa.
So, Christine, what is the role of a good lamb stew in perhaps your kitchen growing up?
It is, in some ways, it was celebratory food as well, you know, because often, you know, in an Egyptian household, you're fasting maybe two-thirds of the year, which is then predominantly, you know, a vegan diet and, you know, carb-heavy. So once that meat comes out, you're like, yeah.
That's funny.
I'm not restricted, you know. So, yeah. So, you know, and it was just when it, you know, those fasting times or periods are over, it's like, you know, that's when the family gets together and, you know, there's this large spread and it's just, you know, it's just a special time to spend together.
We've got Cheryl in Olathe. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How about you?
Fantastic. A lamb dish. Lamb is cooked perfectly at the Holy Land Cafe. I lived in Jerusalem for 2 years on the West Bank, actually in Ilkutz, and we called it shawarma. They tend to call it heroes here. But that lamb is juicy and flavorful, and it melts in your mouth, and every place else I have been has not been authentic like they are. And there's a restaurant in Sedalia that does it authentically, too.
In Sedalia?
Yes. It's a Middle Eastern restaurant in Sedalia.
Tell me more.
Oh, it's the same way. It's on Highway 50 as you go through the town. I cannot remember the North-South Street. Oh, but it's across from Starbucks, so that's a good marker for finding that one.
Okay.
Assuming there's only one Starbucks in Sedalia.
Yeah, Sedalia, 25,000, one Starbucks. So it's across the street from Starbucks.
Okay, thank you.
Falafel is good if you put tzatziki sauce on it. And baba ganoush is to die for at both of those places.
Okay, so we've got the Holy Land Cafe and the Middle Eastern restaurant in Sedalia that's across from the Starbucks, and we don't know what it's called, but Cheryl assures us that we can find it. Okay, so I want to take another call. We're going to talk now to Francis. Francis is calling from Kansas City. Hi, Francis.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How about you?
Very, very good. And I thoroughly enjoy this show. I'm Lebanese. Some people say that our family was initially Syrian. My grandparents came to this country, and what I was responding to initially was the host, the guest's discussion of her time with her grandmother and her grandfather, and I had a very similar experience. There was always wonderful food on my grandmother's table. I mean, fantastic food, and I've learned to make it too. But what I wanted to bring up was that as far as pita bread, I'm a real picky pita bread person, and I have found that the pita bread, and I think Charles already brought it up, at the Olive Cafe is wonderful, and it's always fresh, and I even get it when it's just warm, when it just came. And their Middle Eastern salads are very good, but one of the things that I really enjoy is finding their Middle Eastern yogurts that are so superior to anything I've bought, you know, in the average grocery store type thing.
And so you're talking about the Olive Cafe?
The Olive Cafe. Now, the Olive Cafe, it is also a grocery store, and I just love going through and looking at all the various Middle Eastern foods that they have in the grocery store. So I make, as I said, I make Middle Eastern food myself, and I use them to get my various spices and mixings and everything like that. But
okay.
I have to say, they're, when I buy things made there, I found that their pita bread and their Middle Eastern salads are absolutely wonderful. And their gyro meat is very, very good.
Thank you, Frances.
Anyway, that's what I wanted to contribute.
Thank you. Charles, you're also recommending the Olive Cafe.
Yeah, I mean, it's way east, you know, out of my usual pathways. But I should say that I used to work with the owner of it at a restaurant a million years ago. And it's family-owned, very serious about what they do. And it is, you know, it's a charming place to find a lot of different things. I also want to put a shout-out that the Jerusalem Bakery on Westport Road mm-hmm. also has really wonderful pita bread.
Yeah.
Very fine.
Yeah.
And Mary, you are recommending their hummus.
I was at the Jerusalem Cafe. I think it's as good as you're going to find in Kansas City. And I notice a lot of people carry it out.
Mm-hmm. Would it be, I have admittedly not researched this, but my impression is that Jerusalem Cafe is sort of one of the original or at least early Middle Eastern restaurants in Kansas City.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's right. And they even have a food truck.
What do you think about the way that Jerusalem Cafe kind of introduced a lot of Kansas Cityans to this cuisine? Because I think, you know, that maybe formed a lot of people's ideas of what is even Middle Eastern food here.
I would say it was an early pioneer, and then some other restaurants have come along and maybe taken it up another notch.
Jerusalem Cafe, you know, opened as a casual sort of cafe about 32 years ago. And until then, there were restaurants, Nabil's comes to mind, mm-hmm. that, you know, sort of had a Middle Eastern, I hate to use this word, flair. But those were fancy restaurants. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Jerusalem Cafe is an old hippie restaurant, I call it.
Well, the food critics will be right back, but it's time to say goodbye to Christine Boutros. Christine, thank you for stopping by, and I hope we find you some really good lamb stew.
Thanks so much, Jana.
Welcome back to KCUR Central Standard. We've got a busy last bit of this show this morning because we've got a lot of people who want to weigh in on Middle Eastern food, and we've got our critics in the house still, Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, and Jenny Vergara. Hi again, guys.
Hello.
I am Gina Kaufman, in case I did not mention that. So, you guys, we have a lot more recommendations to get to, and I'm interested kind of in some of the Middle Eastern dishes that are starting to pop up on less particularly Middle Eastern or Mediterranean restaurants. Mary, you've got a couple of those kinds of recommendations on your list.
I do. One would be Eden Alley, which is known to our listeners as a vegetarian restaurant. They have a platter that I really like that's got soft falafel patties, and it would meet your requirement, Jenny, of not being just brown. Yep, baked and served on black and brown rice with some chutneys and hummus. And I think that's a really nice dish. And then also Pigwich. And you would not think about going to Pigwich for Middle Eastern food. But
right. You'd think barbecue.
No,
for
actually.
Example, or a sandwich.
Yeah. Big time meat because of the butcher shop, local pig next door. But obviously he has to have a vegetarian option. And Alex has a falafel sandwich on the menu with a Fadouvan tzatziki, which is, think curry with the yogurt sauce. And it's really very good and a little out of the box.
And Jenny and Mary, you are both recommending Chai Shai. You're recommending different dishes. So I'll start with you, Mary. You've got an achari chicken you're telling us to try.
Yes, it's a spicy chicken. It's cooked in a pickling spice, and it has basmati rice and spicy mango and naan. And it's a, you know, it's just a really nice, I love chicken and rice. And that's one way to look at it, with a really nice spicy sauce. Very tender chicken.
And Jenny, what are you recommending there?
I have recently rediscovered Chai Shai and the lamb korma, which I now have Postmates bring to me on a weekly basis to my house. But basically, it's fragrant chunks of lamb that are just basically roasted down with cumin and cardamom and mace, served with rice. It's got pink pickled onions that go with it, a little pita bread, and a little side salad. And it's just the perfect dinner. Very comforting this time of year for sure.
Before we hop back over to our calls, you're also recommending a kibbeh dish, which we had just heard from one of our guests as something that she grew up making in her grandmother's Syrian kitchen. Where are you recommending we go for kibbeh?
Basha Cuisine is over in Overland Park, and it's very upscale on the inside, and the food is really, really good. It's Iranian Persian, and they have a kibbeh that on their appetizer menu, and they're doing the little croquettes. And so I'm familiar with that because I was married to a Brazilian for years and years, and in Brazilian culture, it's a beach food. It's basically just like a little beach snack that you'd have of Lebanese, you know, Persian descent. But ground beef, flavored with onions, a little bit of herbs, you know, rolled and fried in kind of a bulgur wheat or a cracked wheat. Just really delicious.
Do they serve alcohol at Basha? I can't remember. It's kind of fancy-ish.
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. We don't know the answer to that, but we're also getting a tweet from a listener who's recommending Basha. This listener is recommending Basha for koshari, which is what the dish that Christine was recommending, the lentil and pasta dish. And this listener says that they have pasta in theirs, that Aladdin's doesn't have pasta, just lentils, rice, and onions. So a little distinction for us there. Let's talk to our caller, Stephen, in Independence. Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
What can you share?
I grew up in Los Angeles, and my mother worked at a restaurant that served Armenian food. And my favorite dish there is an appetizer called lahmacun. It's Armenian pizza. And I have been looking for it ever since we moved. Does anybody know where I can find some?
And what is this dish called again?
Lahmacun.
Lahmacun. Anyone know of a lahmacun or like a Middle Eastern flatbread for Stephen?
What's it got on it? Can you describe it?
It's a flatbread, and it has a kind of a tomato and lamb sauce that goes on top.
It sounds good. All right. We're drawing blanks in the studio. But speaking of searches, we have Kristen. Kristen is calling us from Kansas City, Missouri, and she is talking to us about lamb stew. Hello, Kristen.
Hi. Hi, Mary. It's Kristen. I'm full-blooded Assyrian, and that's not Syrian, but Assyrian, and a little Armenian. And we have in our culture khurish and shorba, which are two different kinds of stews. I think one has green beans and one doesn't. And then dolma and lulu kebab and shish kebab and all those foods. And I've never been able to find anything like it. The closest, I'm from California, the closest is Afghani food and sometimes Persian food, which is where my grandparents all came from.
So you are looking for lamb stew.
Well, I actually don't eat lamb anymore. I don't eat meat, just chicken. So I'm not looking for it. I'm just saying that we have it. It's very popular. It's what I grew up eating, and I loved it. And I think that we're, in at least in Kansas City, very used to sort of Palestinian and limited Greek, Middle Eastern foods, but there's so many more items that we don't have any exposure to here in the Kansas City area that I know of. And I wish that we had more access to that. And there used to be a kebab house on Wernel back in the day.
A kebab house on Wernel. Charles is nodding.
It was a restaurant, and it was really good. And they would even have live music. I really enjoyed it. And that went away, and I don't really know where you can even get Persian and Afghani cuisine.
Well, they have Persian cuisine at Casey Grill and Kebab. At least that's what they say.
Yes.
And
I second that.
And I'd like to know as where one finds anything close to Armenian cuisine in Kansas City. Is there a place?
There isn't. I mean, I often think I should open up a restaurant because there's so many dishes that we make that I've never even, I mean, come close to tasting here, and it makes me frustrated.
Oh, I'm sorry about your frustration, Kristen, but everything you have described sounds absolutely delicious. So thanks for the business idea that you've put out there for our listeners. And, you know, I guess rather than wrapping things up on a sour note where we're talking about what we can't find, let's talk to Marilyn. Marilyn is with us from Shawnee. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. I'm just calling to affirm the good things I've heard about Holy Land Cafe. My husband and I eat there frequently, and we love the hummus, and I love to get the appetizer plate because you can get a little taste of a lot of good things, like the grape leaves and the spanakopita and, geez, I'm not thinking of everything now, but there's about six different things that you can taste that are really good. And then they have a great lentil soup, and we love the pita bread sandwich with falafel and hummus. And there is a store next door if you want to go shopping for a whole bunch of pita bread. And the prices are great, and you get a lot of food for what you pay, especially at lunch.
Thanks, Marilyn.
So anybody that's hungry, it's a good place to go.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So Marilyn, Marilyn likes the Holy Land Cafe, and we've heard about them a couple of times. I'm wondering, Charles, tell us about Hibashi House.
It's down in the City Market, actually in the actual City Market building. And it's not very expensive. It's not very fancy. But I've always had good meals there.
And you can take, you can buy pita and spices and other things as well.
Right, right. It's mostly a lunch place, I think, isn't it? Yeah.
Speaking of lunch, I mean, we've gotten some enthusiasm on Twitter over the Olive Cafe recommendation, specifically about the lunch buffet. And this listener says that everything is great there, especially the grilled cauliflower. And we have another tweet from someone who's looking for rosewater carrots.
I haven't seen rosewater carrots. We see rosewater and orange water both much more in desserts in Kansas City and Middle Eastern restaurants. So, but that sounds delicious. I'd make that at home. That sounds yummy.
Jenny, you are recommending some moussaka?
Yes. So a Greek preparation for moussaka at Holy Land Cafe. And like I said, this is the traditional kind of ground beef with eggplant that's kind of layered, a little tomato sauce, and then it's covered with this bechamel sauce that's baked. And it's just, it's like creamy Greek lasagna, if you can kind of get yourself there, and delicious and unique. I mean, it's a step away from the kebabs and falafels and kind of shawarma sandwiches that we've been talking about all hour, and it's just a little bit of a richer dish. And I'm with the previous caller. I'd like to see a lot more entree items that are unique to each of these cultures kind of coming up on menus. We're ready. We're ready for more exotic cuisines and dishes, I think.
Speaking quickly of one more specific dish that a listener is having a hard time finding, and we'll keep it brief. Brittany in Kansas City, what is it that you are wondering about?
Yeah, so I think it was called kibda, but it's a liver dish, and it's cooked on like a stovetop with onions and tomatoes and spices and eaten with pita. I used to work at a Middle Eastern restaurant, and I have not been able to find it anywhere.
And I'm guessing the restaurant you found it at isn't there anymore?
Well, yeah, so the family that owned it would make it for us to eat, but it had closed down a few years ago. So.
Oh, okay.
And I have kibda. The recipe, but it's just not as good. Yeah, I think it's called kibda.
Anyone?
I was going to say, that certainly sounds like a family meal dish at any Middle Eastern restaurant, obviously using all the kibbles and bits that kind of come with.
Well,
so, sounds good, though.
I like this note that we're ready for some of these dishes to start appearing on the menus. Mm-hmm. The people are becoming more familiar and more
adventurous.
Yeah. Mary, tell me about the Marble Top Cafe. I don't know if that one's come up yet.
We talked about it at the beginning in conjunction with the hummus. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you go up to the counter and you order and they bring you the food. And
where is it?
It's right just north of Ward Parkway Shopping Center.
Okay.
And Yummy, who has the hummus in all the grocery stores, owns that restaurant, and it's pretty typical with the shawarma and the, you know, kebabs and hummus and different pita sandwiches.
What do you like to get there other than hummus?
I like the shawarma, which is a chicken that's usually cooked for hours on a spit, and then it's rolled up in pita and served with a tzatziki sauce, and it's quite good there.
So does anyone else have, Charles, what is it that you get at Aladdin Cafe before we change topics to some restaurant news before we go on out here?
I think the lentil soup there is great. You know, it's a traditional Midwest, Middle Eastern restaurant. I don't go there very often anymore, but.
And you're recommending them for the lentil soup?
Oh, yeah, I like the lentil soup there.
Now, their lentil soup has come up on this show before, and I'm curious, what is it that makes this lentil soup so great that people really notice it? Lentil, the soup, the cup of soup you get before your dish, you know, a lot of the times.
Well,
I like forget
the,
about
I like
it.
The lentil soup that doesn't look like it has lentils in it.
Well, I was going to say, this is not a brothy soup with lentils floating in it. This has been pureed with a lot of spice.
Is it brown lentils or yellow or orange lentils?
Dark green.
Okay.
Dark green, either French lentils or the traditional green lentils. And it's just pureed with onions and garlic and all of that spice.
Turmeric. Mm-hmm.
So you guys.
Creamy.
This has been a great conversation about Middle Eastern food. We'll have the whole list up at kcur.org. later today, and please keep answering our searches for the various dishes that people can't find by tweeting us. We're at KCURCST. Houston's is closing, and this is really big news for Kansas City. And I'd just like to hear a little bit about what you guys think this means, the closure of Houston's.
I'm sad about it. It was kind of a family institution. My kids are 32 and 29, and we've been going there basically since they were born. We used to go for birthdays, and I remember when they were little, they would split the ribs and think they had died and gone to heaven.
What do we know about why they're closing?
I think some contractual issues.
Because they always looked packed to me, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they were, yeah.
Yeah.
What does it mean to you, Charles?
Well, I hadn't gone there in years. I will say that they had impeccable service. Stepford kind of service, like Stepford Wise. And they serve the kind of cuisine that a lot of people like. I didn't find it to be very adventurous or even to me that interesting.
Well, but that's the point.
Yeah, but some people love the veggie burger, and that was like one of the first places that had a good veggie burger.
There are some other dishes there that people just have glommed onto. What I mean, I feel like, isn't there like a French dip there that people mm-hmm. kind of freak
yep.
out about?
Mm-hmm.
They had really good salads.
Yeah.
If you were
I love
that.
The grilled chicken salad with
it
the
was
peanut
one of the,
dressing.
One of the first kind of American grills that was not necessarily casual dining and not necessarily fine dining. It fit that kind of mid-tier level. And the truth of the matter is, I think our sadness about this is one of the last bastions of old-time restaurants that's leaving the plaza to make way for newer restaurants. So this is a 30-year-old
restaurant.
Perhaps
trendier restaurants.
Perhaps. But I will mourn the passing of Houston's.
I want somebody to bring Pooch's Cafeteria back. That's what used to be there.
Write the Hillstone Restaurant Group. Tell them you want Houston's to stay somewhere else. Tell them to find a new home.
Jenny is passionate about this
yeah.
one.
They say
okay.
they're
trying. I am.
Well, our time is up. We'll have the list of our best Middle Eastern dishes in Kansas City online later today at kcur.org. Charles Ferruzza, Mary Block, Jenny Vergara, this has been great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find food reviews by Charles in The Independent and the Shawnee Mission Post. Jenny's writing is in Feast Magazine. And if you try to keep up with Mary's culinary adventures, you can do your best. She blogs about food at Around the Block. If you want to listen back to this conversation or share it with a friend, it'll be archived online at kcur.org/Central Standard with all the rest of our shows. That's kcur.org/Central Standard. And Kansas City food lovers, take a look at Tuesday's conversation. It's the McDonald's story, but it includes a really wild part of the history of Winstead's founder, Nabil Haddad. It includes CIA agents. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Andrea Todd Hope, Jen Chen and Suzanne Hogan. I'm Gina Kaufman. Linda Scher and Ron Yerman are on the board for us. And our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs.